Hi, and welcome to Failureology, a podcast about engineering failures. I'm your host, Nicole.
And I'm Brian, and we're both from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Welcome to our 30th mini-failure episode. That is 10 episodes away from our midlife crisis mini-failure episode, which might be sports car failure-related for episode number 40.
I think we can make that happen.
I'm pretty sure there's been sports cars that have had engineering failures.
Yes, for sure, for sure. We're bringing you engineering failures in bite-sized pieces.
Make no mistake, though. These are still significant failures, but they either have pretty straightforward causes or not enough information available for a full episode of Failureology.
These episodes are also just the failure, no news, and no ads. For now, at least.
It's like Failureology Lite. And this week's mini-failure is about the Bhopal gas tragedy. The third in a series of at least four, now five, environmental disasters. We've talked about the Love Canal, Minamata disease, and now on this episode, we're talking about the Bhopal gas tragedy. The Bhopal gas tragedy occurred on the night of December 2nd into December 3rd, 1984 in Bhopal, India. Over 500,000 people were exposed to methyl isocyanate gas while it was making its way around to all of the small towns located near the pesticide plant that was the source of the gas leak. The official number of immediate deaths from the gas leak is 2,259, which is a lot of people. The government paid compensation to 3,787 victims' family members and 574,355 injured victims in 2008. A lot of people were impacted by this incident. So where Nicole and I live in Calgary, there's just under 1.5 million people, I believe, that live here. So that would be a third of our entire city being impacted by this.
Yeah, this was really tragic. And we're going to get into it here, but this one gives me nuclear reactor meltdown vibes in that things started to go sideways and everyone just thought, oh, that's fine. It's fine. Nothing to see here. And then all of a sudden, once everyone else realized what was going on, it was kind of too late. And so that's really, really tragic. The accident itself, which was preventable, didn't have to get so bad had they raise the flag as soon as the leak occurred. They could have prevented a lot of death and tragedy, but they didn't react appropriately and they allowed this gas to spread to areas that were heavily populated. They didn't give people time to evacuate. They didn't give them time to shelter in place. People were coming out of their homes to see what all the commotion was and essentially getting poisoned by the air around them, which is really unfortunate and frustrating. This one was definitely a frustrating one to research. So the pesticide factory was built in 1969 to produce pesticide with methyl isocyanate as an intermediate. The process included methylamine reacting with phosgene to create the methyl isocyanate, which then reacted with 1-naphthol to create the final product, carbaryl. It's a lot of chemical words that I have not pronounced in a very long time. If I pronounced any of them wrong, I'm sorry. I tried.
Sorry, chemistry people that listen to our podcast. We'll try better next time.
Sorry. Oh my God, we sound so Canadian. There were other ways to get the same end product, the carbaryl, without the methyl isocyanate, but they were more expensive to produce. And so, no surprise here, this production team wanted to take the most cost-effective route. While demand for pesticides fell in the early 80s, production carried on, leading to lots of storage of unused methyl isocyanate at the Bhopal plant. There had been a number of issues and smaller incidents in and around the plant in the years leading up to the major gas leak that occurred in December 1984, which led to chemical burns and in some cases, death. So there had been other incidents at this plant that were severe to at least the people in the immediate vicinity. The facility included 3 underground storage tanks for the methyl isocyanate, each capable of holding 68,000 liters. The tanks were only allowed to be fitted with the methyl isocyanate to a max of 50% and were then filled with inert nitrogen gas, keeping out impurities and moisture, while still allowing the methyl isocyanate to be pumped out as needed.
In October 1984, one of the tanks lost its ability to contain the inert nitrogen and the liquid methyl isocyanate couldn't be pumped out. By December, most of the plant's safety systems were non-functional.
That's what I want to hear.
I feel that's a little bit of foreshadowing happening right here. If you have a plant that produces chemicals, you should probably have all of the safety systems operating. That's what they're there for.
Oh, yeah. And we've seen this before time and time again. It's certainly not funny, but it's so ridiculous that I can't help but laugh a little bit. Like, what did you think was going to happen, guys?
Yeah, like, if you don't want your plant to show up on our show, make sure your safety systems are operating.
Exactly.
So in addition to these safety systems that weren't operating, several vent gas scrubbers and a steam boiler meant to clean the pipes were out of service. So that's even more things that aren't working in a plant, and they should be working in a plant. Late on December 2nd, 1984, water entered the tank via a side pipe that was being repaired. The water created a runaway exothermic reaction with the methyl isocyanate. Within 30 minutes, the pressure in the tank went from 2 psi to 10 psi. Workers at the time thought the gauge was malfunctioning, which, again, is something that we've talked about on this show before.
Yeah, when the safety systems break down, like we're seeing at this plant, we, the operators, lose trust in them. They start to not believe even the things that are working properly because they no longer have a good understanding of what works and what doesn't. So they don't really trust anything. And it allows for stuff like this to go ignored, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. So as they're ignoring this throughout the evening, as it rolls into night, by 11:30 p.m., they start to feel unwell and they begin to look for a leak. At 12:40 a.m. on the morning of December 3rd, just after tea break, that for some reason was deemed necessary, the tank had reached a critical state. Temperatures had reached 25 degrees Celsius and pressure was up to 40 psi. So pressure's increased quite a bit, since the night before. This is trending in a direction that it shouldn't be trending in. So at this point, the emergency relief valve burst open and started venting toxic methyl isocyanate gas. The pressure in the tank continued to increase to 55 psi. Remember, this is a runaway exothermic reaction, so the temperatures and the pressures will just continue to increase.
There were three safety devices that were, surprise, surprise, not functioning or insufficiently sized. There was a refrigeration system that was meant to cool the tanks, but it was shut down in January 1982, so almost 3 years before this happened. And the Freon, or refrigerant, was removed in June 1984. Without the refrigeration to cool the tanks, the 11 degrees Celsius high temperature alarm was long since disconnected, and storage temperatures ranged between 15 and 40 degrees Celsius. So to recap, the high limit alarm was set for 11 degrees Celsius. But since the cooling system was removed, the average temperature was 15 to 40 degrees Celsius, which is 3 to 29 degrees above the high limit alarm. That on its own is a concern. Secondly, a flare tower used to burn the gas if it leaked was down for maintenance and was also too small to neutralize the leak produced. So the flare tower, which is meant to burn that gas so you don't poison anybody, was both too small and not working. And lastly, a vent gas scrubber was deactivated and didn't have enough caustic soda and power to safely stop the leak produced. So again, the gas scrubber, which was meant to prevent poisoning of thousands of people, was not set up properly to react to this leak, which again is a huge problem. And I don't think all of these together, of course, led to this catastrophic event, but I'd like to think that if even one of those was working, you could have at least mitigated the disastrous outcome a little bit. Like, maybe not a ton, but maybe a little. Just one win here would be nice. Just the smallest, tiniest little win would be nice. But this is just all kinds of bad. 30 tons of methyl isocyanate escaped from the tank in 45 to 60 minutes. And another 10 tons escaped in the hour after that. Due to the wind direction at the time, the gas was directed to the southeast straight over Bhopal. The alarm was triggered at 12:50 a.m., about 10 minutes after the emergency relief valve burst open. But since the alarm inside the plant was decoupled from the one outside the plant, which was meant to alert the public, evacuation didn't start until sometime after 2 a.m., so well over an hour after the emergency relief valve burst and all of this gas was leaked into the atmosphere, well over an hour after that, the public was notified of this. Residents near the plant saw workers fleeing and they called the police. But when the police called the plant at 1:25 a.m. and again at 2:10 a.m., they said everything was okay. The majority of residents in Bhopal were notified of the gas leak by being exposed to the gas itself or opening their doors to see what all the commotion was about. They should have either had the opportunity to evacuate before the gas arrived or been instructed to shelter in place, and doing so would have saved a lot of lives.
So initial effects from this gas leak were coughing, severe eye irritation, uncontrollable eyelid twitching, a feeling of suffocation, burning in the respiratory tract, breathlessness, stomach pains, and vomiting. None of those sound fun at all. Since methyl isocyanate is twice as dense as air, the short folks inhaled higher concentrations of this poisonous gas. Thousands died by the following morning from choking, reflexogenic circulatory collapse, and pulmonary edema. Individuals that survived the initial leak were exposed to cancers, blindness, loss of livelihood, and financial strain. The gas cloud was believed to contain chloroform, dichloromethane, hydrogen chloride, methylamine, dimethylamine, trimethylamine, and carbon dioxide that was either present in the tank or was produced in the storage tank when the methyl isocyanate, chloroform, and water reacted. The healthcare system obviously became immediately overloaded in the affected area. Medical staff were unprepared for all the casualties, and they were also not trained for methyl isocyanate gas inhalation. So one more factor in this whole chain of unfortunate events. All these things happen because of a lack of systems that are present or things that have been disabled, but then the medical system in a town where this plant is isn't trained to deal with a lot of the exposure from a very common intermediary step that in this chemical or in this fertilizer production.
So there are two theories about how this leak happened. The first is corporate negligence led to under-maintained and decaying facilities, a weak attitude towards safety, and under-trained staff that led to water getting into the storage tank without the proper safeguards or leak mitigation features. And the second theory is worker sabotage. The plant's owners argue that it's not possible for water to get into the tank without human effort, and workers were cleaning out a clogged pipe with water about 120 meters from the tank, but they claim they were not told to isolate the tank. And now, even if worker sabotage was at play, there still should have been safety features to prevent the gas from leaking to atmosphere and poisoning literally hundreds of thousands of people. And so while worker sabotage, sure, could be possible, I mean, I don't know, I wasn't there. Even if it was the case, there are still so many other things that could have prevented this catastrophic leak that weren't there because of the decaying facilities that were under-maintained, the lax attitude towards safety, and all of these leak mitigation features that weren't functional.
So there you have it, the Bhopal gas leak disaster in India. Due to malfunctioning safety systems and a lack of safety culture, many people were poisoned and the lives of their families were impacted forever.
Thanks for listening to this mini failure episode. For our regular episodes, check out Failureology wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to chat with us, our Twitter handle is @Failureology. You can email us at thefailureologypodcast@gmail.com. You can connect with us on LinkedIn, or you can message us right in the Patreon app. And there are links to all of these in the show notes. Also, reminder that we have a dedicated RSS feed for our Patreon episodes, so you can listen to all of our content in your regular podcast app. Reach out if you need help setting that up. Bye, everyone. Talk soon.